I came to Schenectady in 1930 with my brothers and sisters and my mother, because my father had died, and we were living at that time in Atlanta, Georgia. We came to Schenectady just to visit my aunt, who was living here. Turned out to be many years. I'm still here. She decided to stay because she was here with all of her children, and things were not so good in Atlanta, and my mother decided to stay here because at least there was an opportunity to find work. It was menial type work. And the best jobs in Schenectady were at the Hotel Bancarla. And one of those best jobs was being a waiter, because they had all black waiters in the hotel in those days. The shortcoming about that was, once you, you know, decide to leave the hotel, you had to go to another city, some other place where there were black waiters. That was the difficult part about it. You have to go to Troy, to Hendrick Hudson. There was the Mohawk Hotel on Broadway at that time, and they employed not black waiters, but they employed black bellhops. The Hotel Bancarla, they had black bellhops and black waiters, and had black women working in housekeeping, matrons, jobs like that. They were considered the best jobs. And when I tell people they were the best jobs, they would say, what kind of money did they pay? I said, well, working as a waiter, you got paid $1 a day. And then you had to pay 10 cents for your coat, because the laundry was right in the hotel. And but the reason that was so low, they knew that you would be depending on gratuities for the rest of them. I would say you'd run around $25, $30, $40 a week. Now some days you'd go and you'd make very little. For instance, the way they paid, we would work on Wednesdays. We would go down and work to serve the Lions and the Kiwanis, and because of them meeting at noontime, the hotel would give you an extra 75 cents for serving those parties. You had to set up and serve and then tear down, 75 cents. For dinner parties, they'd give you $1. That's another extra dollar. Now, this is above your salary. And you would, at the end of the year, the Kiwanis would pass the hat and they would put money in. You know, before I came to Schenectady, I read about General Electric Company, because my aunt was here, and I looked on the map and I read there was General Electric Company. So I said to myself, that'd be a good place to go, might be a good place to work. But then when I got to Schenectady, I found that it wasn't as easy to get a job at the General Electric Company as I thought. I was in school, but then I said, well, if I get a job at General Electric Company, then I'll see what it pays. If it pays good, I might even just stop going to school. I was encouraged to continue to go because I was athletically inclined, and in those days I could run pretty fast. I thought my brothers were good track men, and they went on. My older brother and I naturally had it on our minds, you know, the paramount thing was to help my mother. So we were torn with the idea and didn't know what to do. I moved up the ranks as a busboy and became a waiter because I made a lot of friends with some of the guests down there, and they wanted me to be their waiter before my uncle decided to graduate me, you know. They said, Mr. Lampkins, why, let your nephew wait on us. Nah, he's not a waiter, he's a busboy. No, we want him to wait on us. By, as you say, popular demand, got to be a waiter. And this happened along about the end of 1930. And in 31, I remember 31, I was working full-time as a waiter and was doing pretty good. The gratuities came in, that helped to sustain and support the family. And there were my younger brothers who wanted to continue on in school. We wanted them to, and we encouraged them. So you go ahead, we'll work, older brother and I. So, and my sisters, and they went on. And, they went to college. Two of my sisters went to college. And, my brother, the third boy in the family, he went on. He was very good in track and was an excellent student. And we supported him because in those days there were no loans. You had to make it yourself. And we helped him. I continued on. Then my older brother left and went up to Auburn. And he was there just a few months before we got a note that he was going to be married. So that left me there, here, so sort of in charge. I didn't mind that. I was able to carry on. At the same time, I had my eye on a job at General Electric. I went down and applied for a job, and they said, "We're not hiring." Turned me away, just like that. And the fellows used to say, "Gee, you're wasting your time. They're not going to give you a job." I said, "Why?" "Ah." They didn't say black then. They said, "You're Negro. Well, it's going to take some time for you to get a job." And I was really chagrined. I didn't realize any racism at all until I applied for a job at General Electric Company. And it was always, "We're not hiring." And as I said, I was chagrined because I would be out there playing tennis and some fellow would come along and say, "Gee, I got a job today." I said, "Where are you working?" "General Electric Company." And sometimes they were fellows who had just come to town. And another thing that used to upset me when I was talking to the fellows, some of the fellows who came over with their families and were still struggling with English, and they were given a job. I was surrounded by Italians and Polish, and they would tell me when they were being hired. I said, "Gee whiz, I've been trying to get a job down there." And fellows used to try to tell me. I was trying to disbelieve it because I'd heard so much when I lived in Atlanta that once you got above the Mason and Dixon line, you know, everything was so much better. I found that it was not what I thought. I thought I was coming to the liberated North, but I found that there was later on. I had to admit it to myself that it wasn't so rosy when it came to employment. Other than that, we seemed to have good rapport, no problems. Now I was trying to get into the General Electric Company, and they were very nice. They would accept my application. And in those days, you weren't supposed to separate the applications according to race. Now that was supposed to be taboo. And I thought my application was going to be there right on top of everybody else's, and when it got down to mine, that I would be the next person. Nothing happened until, I remember, 1941. Found myself at Duncan's Inn. Pearl Harbor came, and I heard that. I said, "Oh, boy." I said, "Now I'm going to get drafted, I believe, in the service. I haven't had a chance to make any money to mount anything. Now I'm going in the service." So I went right back down to GE. "I want to get in now." And they said, "Well, no, we still don't have an opening." I went to Knott Terrace High School, where they were having the government then had set up training courses for people to take machine shop work. And I went up there and talked to the fella. Fella said, "Are you working at General Electric Company?" I said, "No, not now." And he said, "Well, come on in." And I went in and signed up to start. And he could see that I had some knowledge. So he said, "Do something for me. Make some taper gauges for me." So I made the taper gauges for him. And he was elated. He was so pleased. He called somebody else who was in one of the courses down here on Broadway. He said, "I want you to see these taper gauges that one of my students made for me." So I showed them to him. And they liked that. And I tried to do a good job, you know, made them look like brand new almost, you know. When I did that, I'd been hired at the General Electric Company. Like I said, I went down there when I heard about Pearl Harbor. Nothing there. And they said, "Come back to see us in 6 months." Well, I can't wait 6 months. So I went back down there. I must have been 2 months or 3 months. And I said, I need a job. because I knew, you know, they were going to draft me. I really didn't want to go into service because I wanted to make some money. I couldn't afford to go into service and leave my mother, you know, with my brothers and sisters all younger than I am. I wanted to make some money to try to get her comfortable. And when I went down and said, I'd like to get in, I got to get in. That's 2 months after Pearl Harbor, 3 months. And they said, I don't have a thing. And soon after that, I went back again. And they said, we don't have a thing. I said, well, you have my application on file. No, you better make out another one, because we only keep these things on file so long. I made this out. I said, now, this is ridiculous. I keep coming down here, you know. I said, look, don't worry about the machinist helpless job. I'll take anything, anything you got, anything at all. Within a week's time, I got a telegram to come to work, because, see, I didn't have anything specified, take anything. So they gave me a job as a material handler or something like that, but it was nothing more than a glorified porter's job. But when I was hired, when they came out with the applications, they had them all clipped together, and on the front I noticed where they had Negro, it was circled in red on every one of them, circled in red. They didn't know that I was looking at that, you know. I could see when the man or the lady, I don't know who it was now, when they flipped up through there, you know, just to see what I could look like, because they had every application that I had put in. And I said, see, as long as I ask for a machinist helpless job, they say, no soap. As soon as I said, I'd take anything you have, they call me. And I figured that red circle around Negro told them, don't call him.